Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante with our longtime friend and guest of the show, Dustin Schutte, Big Ten writer for Sports Illustrated. Dustin, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Jim. It's been a while since we've been able to chat, so I'm looking forward to our conversation today. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's the off season, so I'm happy to have you on the air, get a little different perspective on things, maybe a little bit of more of a Big Ten picture from you. We always appreciate your ability to do that for us. And I should also introduce you as the newly moved Dustin Schutte.
Yeah. I've been kind of all over these last 4 or 5 years, from Atlanta to Orlando to Indianapolis and now in St. Louis. So I'm taking in my first Cardinals game. They're playing the Braves at Busch Stadium today. So I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Well, as a New York Mets fan, talking about the hated, see, their name, they're not the Atlanta Braves. They're the hated Atlanta Braves. Okay.
That makes sense.
Get the name correctly. So I hope I know it's not the case, but I'll be rooting for the home team there. I'll be rooting for the St. Louis Cardinals. All right, Dustin. As I mentioned, we wanted to get your perspective on things like from the Big Ten overall picture. And one of the things that I think has been, people are aware of it, but I feel like overlooking the fact when talking about the transfer portal and paying players and all those other things going on, we kind of forget about the fact that it's really is a new Big Ten with those four teams coming in from the West Coast.
Yeah, and I think it adds such a level of intrigue because you look at the schools that are coming in. I mean, obviously, Oregon has been one of the better college football teams in recent seasons. You look at USC and the tradition that they have. Washington just played the national championship game a season ago. They've been really good, but they're obviously going through a coaching change. So, and then UCLA is kind of the one that those other three are kind of dragging along into the conference, but they do have some history there. It might take them a little bit longer to kind of fit into the Big Ten, but I'm kind of looking forward to it because I think what's interesting, and we can talk about this with how Ohio State kind of transformed the offense in the Big Ten and how Michigan kind of went back to the old school ground and pound. But you look at Oregon and Washington and USC and the way that those schools have found success, it's been, you know, with a lot of offense. And sometimes they've had good defenses, but Lincoln Riley not known for his defense. Oregon, you know, when they play up-tempo, they're going to give up a lot of points. And Washington defense was solid last season, but obviously they were known for their offense with Michael Penix. So it's going to be really interesting to see how these high-powered offensive teams kind of fit in schematically and defensively to the rest of the Big Ten. I think that's going to be a really interesting aspect of those four teams joining the conference.
Where's the bigger adjustment need to be made? Those West Coast teams adjusting to the Big Ten teams or the Big Ten teams adjusting to the multiple teams coming from the West Coast?
Yeah, I think it's going to probably be when you look at where USC and Oregon want to be specifically, and you could probably throw Washington into that category. When you look at where those teams want to be, I think that they're going to have to adjust because in the Pac-12, you probably didn't need the level of offensive line play that you're going to need in the Big Ten and the play on the defensive line, if we're going to be completely honest. So I think that those teams are going to have to make an adjustment. I mean, obviously, if you look at Oregon playing teams like, and USC for this matter, playing teams like Illinois, Purdue, I don't have the schedule open in front of me, but those level of teams, they're obviously not going to make a big adjustment to those kind of games. But when you look at teams that tend to have bigger offensive linemen, more athleticism on the defensive side, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, you could probably even throw Iowa and Wisconsin in there as a little bit of a different type of look that they'll get with those teams, you know, being really good and really solid on the offensive lines and defensive lines. I think that that's what's going to be the most interesting. I think that those teams from the West Coast are going to have to make those adjustments. And it's going to be interesting to see how quickly they can make those adjustments. I don't think Oregon's going to have much of a problem, to be quite honest. I think Danton Lanning's a really good coach. I think he coaches both sides of the ball really well. I am not sold on USC and their defense fitting into the Big Ten just yet. I think that they'll put up a lot of points on the offensive side, but can they stop anybody? That was obviously, even though they had Caleb Williams last season, the Heisman Trophy winner, still finished 7-5 in the regular season, right? So that's going to be a really intriguing to see how USC specifically transitions to the Big Ten and what those defenses are going to have to adjust to.
What I wondered about those teams coming in is not so much when they have the big game, like if Oregon plays Ohio State, you know, two Titans, but could Oregon get used to getting, maybe winning the game, but getting physically beat up a bit, playing a team like a Wisconsin or even Illinois, not a great team, but you know you've played when you play against an Illinois team.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be the interesting aspect of this as well, because the Pac-12 didn't quite have, now last year was a little bit of an exception, right? Everybody talked about they went from the Pac-12 to the Pac-2, and they might have had their best season that they've ever had in the college football playoff era. So, but I don't think consistently over the past, you know, decade, maybe even a little bit longer, that the Pac-12 has had the same level of depth in terms of the teams as the Big Ten. So you're right. I think that there are situations where, and we see it in the Big Ten all the time. You see teams like Iowa who are really good that'll lose a game to Purdue just because of the physicality of the Big Ten and having to go up against those teams week in and week out. So I do think that there's going to be an adjustment. But again, I do think Oregon is probably the team and has the coaching staff that's best able to handle that, as opposed to, I still don't have faith in USC. UCLA has obviously not been good. They've been okay for a while, but they've not had to play a Big Ten caliber schedule. And then Washington, we'll see what happens. I think if Kalen DeBoer was still there, his experience being the offensive coordinator in Indiana and kind of knowing what it takes to be successful in the Big Ten would have helped them out quite a bit. But with that new coaching staff, I don't know. I know Jed Fish is there. He had some time at Michigan, right? So he's got that experience there, but they have to rebuild from scratch. So that might be more of kind of a long-term wait and see how they make the adjustment to this conference.
Well, I get curious about games like I see Oregon plays Wisconsin, and I have the schedule up on a separate screen. That's why I'm looking over that way. Oregon goes to Wisconsin. They go to Madison in the middle of November, and you just wonder what their reaction to it. Not saying they're going to lose the game, but playing in that kind of atmosphere in the cold weather, you wonder if there'll be an effect on them there. Also, Dustin, the other part to this is big changes. No longer are there divisions.
Yeah. So,
you know, the Penn State side, we're just used to every year you play Michigan, you play Ohio State. All of a sudden, with this many teams in the conference and you play nine of them, to create such a great disparity in the schedule. The first team that I think of as the biggest winner with the change in all this is Rutgers. They used to go into every season 0-3, losses to Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. Guess what? They don't play any of them this year.
Yeah. And I think that that's when you look at the divisions, and I think it's easy to talk about which teams get the advantage the most. And you kind of look at towards the top of the Big Ten, because our brains are, you know, kind of on the path of who's going to get to the college football playoff, who has a better path to the Big Ten championship game. But to me, it is going to be teams like Rutgers, like Indiana, Maryland, that even though some years they might have a grueling schedule, there's going to be some seasons where it's going to be an easier opportunity for them to get to bowl games. And that's a big difference for those programs. I mean, I still think teams like Ohio State, Michigan, as you mentioned, Penn State, Oregon, because of the TV money, they're still going to get some really tough games because those networks want those matchups. They don't want to see Penn State play Purdue, Rutgers, UCLA, Indiana, Illinois, and load up that way. They're going to still get some of those high-powered, you know, really entertaining Big Ten quality matchups. But I do think that, yeah, you look at Rutgers as obviously a benefit. It gets a benefit, but you know who gets a disservice to this? I feel Who's like that? Are those four teams coming in from the? Can you imagine if those four teams were in the Big Ten West? And you just look at USC or Oregon, they could have probably run the Big Ten West, especially this coming season, right? Like maybe not USC, but definitely Oregon could have done that. So it's just interesting. And what's funny to me, Jim, is I know there would have had to been some sort of transition where you move some teams from the West over to the East, but this coming season, we would have had, if you would have put those four teams from the Pac-12 into the Big Ten West, you would have almost had a more balanced type of division schedule. And then if my math is right, you're going to have nine teams in each division. And if you still keep a nine game schedule, you're playing eight teams from your division with one crossover game. You're going to get more, probably better matchups in that Big Ten championship game than we've maybe seen in previous years. I don't know. It's just, it's funny how it all works out. Now it's not going to be a factor because we don't have divisions.
Well, the interesting to me is, like they always talk about generals in war, they always fight the last war. And I think it's the case here where you see the disparity with divisions. So let's get rid of divisions at a time when, with the influx of teams from the West Coast, you probably could have had a much more balanced set of divisions. So they're still looking at how things were last year and trying to fix that. The other thing you mentioned about the top teams, like we said, Ohio State, I did this exercise, and we'll talk more about this as the show progresses, but I created what I called the tier one and tier two, the top level teams. I took the eight best, what I thought were the eight best teams, or the four very best teams as tier one, the next four tier two. You could argue a little bit who's eighth best, ninth best, but I think it gets pretty close, and use that to kind of judge the schedule. And I don't think many people could argue with the top four teams being Ohio State, Oregon, then Michigan, and Penn State. Ohio State, they play all three other tier one teams. As a Penn State fan, you can never compliment the Buckeyes. That's just a rule. However, I will say this. If they go through this unscathed, they've earned that championship.
Yeah, no question. And I mean, they've always had to deal with a tough schedule. They've not been afraid to schedule some big games at a conference, but they're truly going to go through a gauntlet in terms of the Big Ten schedule. And like I said, I think that a reason why they are playing so many high quality teams this season is because of the, you know, the television deals with Peacock, NBC, CBS, Fox, all those other networks. They want to see Ohio State play in those big time matchups. So sorry, not sorry, Ohio State.
All right. That's it for quarter number one. Stick around. Lots more to do with Dustin Schutte.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College. And we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter two. I'm Jim Galante with our special guest, Big Ten writer for Sports Illustrated, Dustin Schutte. We're talking about the Big Ten in general, so it's a great conversation. We're usually always so Penn State specific. Now we get to talk a little bit more about the whole conference. And Dustin, you wrapped up quarter number one mentioning that the schedule makers gave Ohio State multiple tough games. That's part of television, getting those great matchups. But I think, and this is another thing, it pains me to ever compliment anybody in the Big Ten offices, okay?
Sure.
Just, it hurts to do that. However, with that said, I think the schedule makers do a great job. I thought before they brought in the last two teams, you know, when it was just USC, UCLA, they made the schedules, they talked about those rivalry games. I thought they did a great balance between providing great matchups, but not overwhelming any of the teams. for example, you know, the triangle of Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. Well, obviously, Ohio State has to play Michigan every year. But what they did was they made each of those teams play Penn State every other year.
Yeah.
Which means they wouldn't get overloaded with those tough games. And the same thing for Penn State. It worked out the same way. They now only have to play one of those two teams each year instead of both of them. Now, with it expanded even more, you know, when they added Washington and Oregon, they adjusted. But I thought the Big Ten schedule makers once more did a great job in balancing it out. And Ohio State getting the short end of the straw this year, I think playing Penn State was just, this is the alternate year, either them or Michigan. And I think when they made the schedule, I'm not sure they knew Oregon was going to be this top five in the country type team. I think if anything, they probably looked at USC as potentially that type of team. And if you notice, Ohio State doesn't also play USC.
Right. And I think that's a fair assessment. And it's interesting because I think in your first year in the Big Ten, a USC Ohio State matchup would have drawn a lot of intrigue from across the country. But another aspect of this scheduling, you said that they did a good job. And I'm sure that there are some, you know, some fans that'll say, no, nah, maybe not so good, depending on what their schedule looks like. But I think one of the interesting aspects is if you look at the USC and UCLA schedule, and again, these the way that they have this, they release this schedule, it's not good on people with glasses and people who can't see that well, because you got to try to decipher what's going on. But everything, USC's really their last trip to Big Ten country, to the Midwest or to the East Coast, is in a game against Rutgers in late October. And then UCLA goes to Nebraska in a game in early November. So those Los Angeles teams aren't going to have to deal, at least this season, with the Midwest weather. Now, it can get cold and it can get ugly in late October and in early November. We all know that. But it's not like USC is going to have to go up to Wisconsin or Minnesota in late November on Thanksgiving weekend. So I thought that that was an interesting aspect of that. Now, I don't know whether the ADs at USC, UCLA said, hey, we don't want to be playing any Big Ten games, you know, in late November in Happy Valley or in Piscataway. I don't know if there was any conversations there, but that was an interesting piece that I thought those teams really aren't going to have to deal with those mid-November, really cold, potentially snowy or really ice cold, rainy games in the Midwest.
Well, I don't know if I'm, again, it's tough sometimes to read this schedule. I have USC. Oh, they're home to Nebraska. Okay. I was thinking that was on the road. And well, Washington does come to Penn State in November, November 9th. It's typically not too bad.
Right, right. And to those like Oregon and Washington, they're farther, they're obviously a lot further north. So they're not gonna have to adjust to that cold weather. And I know that the climate is a little bit different. I'm not gonna get into that. I'm not a weatherman, but it is at least a little bit cooler. So Oregon and Washington, it's not as big of an adjustment for those teams, but I did think that was an interesting aspect. And if they do have to go on the road, like USC plays at Washington, so it's still a West Coast, they're not having to make the flight to Rutgers or Penn State or Maryland or Indiana, and then they go on the road to play UCLA, and then kind of the same thing, UCLA is at Nebraska, they host Iowa, then they're on the road against Washington before the final game against USC.
And I think that that's another part of where they did a good job, I think, also is the amount of traveling, not only when they do it, but it felt like nobody did major trips from the West Coast to the Midwest or East on back-to-back weeks. They either had a home game or a bye in between. So I thought they were very judicious in how they scheduled the traveling for those West Coast teams.
Yeah, and I thought it was a pretty well balanced across the board in terms of the travel. I don't think there's multiple West Coast trips, just looking at this at a glance, like where it's a back-to-back type of situation where teams are going to have to play. You know, it's not like they're going to send Purdue to play UCLA one week and then the next week they're going to go play Washington, because that would just be lunacy. But so they did split those up a little bit. That was, I think that was a really smart move. And it's going to be interesting. I'm sure that there's going to be, I can imagine that that's going to be a factor from here on out. Like, I don't think they're ever going to have those teams, at least for the football schedule, make multiple trips to the West Coast or even probably to the East Coast or Midwest. I think they'll probably continue to do a good job of splitting that up. But like you said, you don't want to always give the people in the Big Ten credit because of we saw what happened when our friend Kevin Warren was in office, right? Like things did not go well and it didn't seem like things were well thought through. So I thought that this was, yeah, I think they did a really good job with assembling this schedule, at least for year one.
And I will quickly get back to football, but I did want to ask you, because I know you cover all of Big Ten sports, and I saw one of the schedules, I think it was for volleyball, I'm not sure, but it seems like they put some pretty good thought into that. How do the other schedules look, and how are they coming about around? Are they, it looked like they were doing some, you know, if Penn State goes to Los Angeles, they'll play both USC and UCLA at the same time, and trying to do similar things for the West Coast teams. They'll make one trip to both Michigan and Michigan State, for example.
Right. And I think, so I've reached out to the Big Ten office to try to answer this question. I haven't gotten a response just yet. Obviously there's a lot going on right now with all these adjustments and things. So I have asked about travel partners because what it appears for volleyball and then men's and women's basketball specifically. And since I tend to cover more of the, I do cover the Big Ten, but then a little bit more specifically, I'll do Indiana and Purdue. It looks as though when Purdue and Indiana are going to play on the West Coast, and I don't remember which teams they have at home and which it's on the road, but I think they travel to play at Washington and at Oregon. And both Indiana and Purdue host USC and UCLA, and then they both travel to Washington and Oregon. So big picture, it looks like what the Big Ten is going to do is they're going to have travel partners, which means basically Purdue and Indiana are going to head out to the West Coast at the same time, play Washington and Oregon. Say they'll play, you know, Indiana plays Oregon on Wednesday, Purdue plays Washington on Wednesday, then they'll swap, then they'll come back home. My guess is in terms of cost, in terms of ease of travel, they'll probably pair teams up. Penn State could be Maryland, could be Rutgers. We don't have the specifics on that. Who's traveling with who, if that's, and I'm sure there's going to be some outliers where maybe just one team heads out to play, you know, maybe Penn State for a standalone game against USC is just heading out by themselves for one game and then coming back. But by and large, it looks like the Big Ten is trying to get a situation where they're going to have travel partners. Volleyball and basketball and women's basketball are the three sports, that we kind of know about. And that looks to be the case. A lot of these other sports, you know, like wrestling or swimming or track and field, there tend to be events. So my guess is they're going to have, you know, just multiple conference events that you don't really have to worry about travel partners or, you know, one-off matches. Those are the, but right now, men's basketball, women's basketball and volleyball looks like that's going to be the case moving forward.
I would think also, I don't know if the baseball and softball schedules have come out yet, but I would think that's something where you typically go for a weekend series.
Yeah.
You could literally do like Penn State and Rutgers both go to USC and UCLA at the same time. And those four teams more crossover, almost like a round robin type of thing, because you could play multiple games over the weekend. You could play double headers. Things like that. You could have some fun with that, right?
I think you need to go to the Big Ten office because I would love that. I think that would increase your fan support because you may see teams that you've never seen before. So if you're Penn State and you host Ohio State, let's say you bring Oregon and I don't know, Illinois, but then you have a round robin and it's almost like a tournament feel. Maybe it's not an actual tournament, but it's kind of got that feel. I think that would generate a lot of enthusiasm and excitement. I like this thought. I like it.
Well, Big Ten, I'm available to you if you want some consulting work done. I just this spring, and I think our regular listeners are aware of this, we started doing some work with some of the women's athletics at Penn State. I'll be honest, a longtime Penn Stater, I had never gone to a Penn State softball game. And I was about to interview the women's softball coach. And I thought, well, it'd be nice if I saw one of their games. Yeah. So I was going to interview her on Wednesday. So I went Tuesday night to a game. Dustin, I loved it. It was fantastic. It's great. And you know, you and I discuss baseball. So softball, I really enjoyed it. So yeah, the idea and Penn State softball, by the way, had a wonderful season this year. If you brought a couple good teams in, you know, to State College for a weekend, as you said, it may not be a tournament per se, but it will have that feel to it. That'd be a lot of fun. Volleyball would be the same way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember thinking back to, I think that's what tennis does. I think they have multi-team events, three or four teams where they, you know, they'll play this sort of thing where you're getting three or four matches in at a time. So the other sports will do it. It would be really fun to see baseball, softball. And like you said, I'd sign up for volleyball for that as well.
Well, I'd also, how about basketball doing that, you know, over a weekend? That would be fun too. You know, you just know at your home court, you're going to see multiple teams. And if it's a doubleheader where the first game is two teams that aren't necessarily the home team, hey, if I'm going to see my team, I get a doubleheader of games. I would really love that. They got to hire both of us here, Dustin. All right. That is going to be it for quarter number two. We've got a lot more to talk about. I promise we will get back to football when we return for quarter number three. So stay tuned.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante with our very special guest, Dustin Schutte. He's a writer for Sports Illustrated, handles the Big Ten, great background, great experience. So we're getting his take on everything going on in the Big Ten. We kind of wandered off into other sports, Dustin. So I'm gonna drag us back to football and what's going on with that. And we talked about it a little bit that there's now no divisions, but we do feel pretty confident about who are the teams that are going to be at the top. I think the consensus is Ohio State and Oregon as the two best teams. Then Michigan and Penn State, I'm going to put them at like number three or four. What's fascinating is with Oregon and Ohio State, and I wanted to get your take on this, very talented teams. We know Ohio State is absolutely loaded. But both teams are dealing with a transfer quarterback coming in. Now, we know that can work, but there can be some pitfalls there too, can't there?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, in today's era, it's not really super surprising that teams at the top are going to have these transfer-level quarterbacks. And what's funny to me, Jim, is I still think this about Ryan Day, that he is a really good coach and coach up the quarterbacks. And I have faith with pretty much anybody that's going to take snaps at Ohio State. Obviously it helps when you have Will Howard under center, right? When you get that transfer. So I still have faith in him, but man, Dylan Gabriel going to Oregon. And I say this because we saw what Bo Nix did at Auburn and he earned the nickname Bo Picks. And he wasn't quite living up to the hype. And I know there's a lot of pressure in the SEC. The competition's a lot better. But the fact that Dan Lanning got Bo Nix to a Heisman caliber player, even though it's against the Pac-12, even though they put up, you know, thousands of yards and hundreds of points every week, it seems like, I do have faith that with Dylan Gabriel, who I think probably has a higher ceiling, but comes to Oregon maybe a little bit more with a little bit more readiness to kind of fit that mold. I think I have maybe a little bit more faith that Oregon's going to have this figured out quickly. But I think we've talked about whether it's through text or whether it's just been through conversation, Ohio State did also bring in quite a haul, and whether that was recruiting or, you know, the Johnny Manziel type of recruiting where you're rubbing your fingers together a little bit there, we don't know. But
let me interrupt you, Dustin. We do know.
Sure. We just don't know the total amount, right? That's the thing that's not been released.
That's exactly it. But anyway, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I felt that needed to be said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, look, both these coaches are proven. And I think one of the interesting factors, and I don't mean to go off on a little bit of a tangent, but this is what interests me too. We talked about the quarterbacks. There's, I think, and this seems crazy, because I think James Franklin is a really good football coach, and I think the people who call for his job are absolutely crazy. Like, it's hard to win 10 games in the Big Ten, and with the expanded playoff, I think Penn State's going to be a regular participant in the college football playoff. There seems to be like this growing concern about Ryan Day's job, which when you look at his record and what he's been able to accomplish, and I know that they've lost to Michigan 3 straight years, and that's been a big knock. But what didn't help was also Jim Tressel and Urban Meyer saying that this is one of the best rosters they've ever seen.
Yes.
This is
yes.
the top team in college. But I mean, talk about, you know, heaping on the pressure. And, you know, Ryan Day, look, Ohio State got a big break. They're probably going to be a college football playoff team. But the fact that Jim Harbaugh goes to the NFL, the fact that Michigan lost essentially its entire starting lineup on both sides of the ball from the national championship team, I would be surprised if Ohio State's not a 2-touchdown favorite going into that game. But the fact that you have two legendary Ohio State figures who know football really well saying this is one of the best assembled rosters we've ever seen. If they don't win a Big Ten championship this year, I personally don't think that Ryan Day's job's in jeopardy, but I'm also not the athletic director at Ohio State. So it's going to be really interesting.
Well, I have that same kind of interest there, and I did read that. But what do Jim Tressel and Urban Meyer have in common that Ryan Day doesn't?
They've won national championships. Yep.
they've got the ring. They're allowed. And it's all about expectations. And you saw, you know, at Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher, they bring in, they were paying their players. They didn't succeed. Now, and this is why I said we know about the money, and it's legal. So I'm not accusing Ohio State of anything shady here, but the money coming in, they brought in all the talent. It's the best talent. And yeah, I think there is pressure on Ryan Day. I'll ask you, what does he need to do to, is it national championship or bust?
I don't think so, because I think if they beat Michigan, that alleviates a lot of the pressure from his seat, because I think that's been the biggest frustration. Like, Ohio State's been really, really good. And even if they didn't win the Big Ten, but they beat Michigan, let's say 2 out of the last 3 years or something along those lines, I think his job is really safe because they've still gotten to the college football playoff. They've still been one of the best teams in the sport. I think they're going to be in the college football playoff, whether or not they win the Big Ten. If they beat Michigan, I think to feel safe, I think he's got to win the Big Ten. And it sounds crazy saying all of this stuff, because you look at some coaches who win 10 games regularly. Ryan Day's like, what, lost one game every season, basically. Like, it's just crazy to think that. But I feel like we're going to probably have an Ohio State Oregon. We might have two Ohio State Oregon matchups this season, right? Maybe three if we get to the college football playoff. I don't know, but I think that they've got to be at least in the Big Ten championship game.
I'm always fascinated by this kind of conversation about expectation levels and then how good a coaching job do, you know, specific guys do. Let me ask you this question. Who's the better coach, or who's done the better job might be the better way to do it. Ryan Day at Ohio State or Greg Schiano at Rutgers?
Oh, man. You know what? That's so tough. I think I'm going to go with Ryan Day on this. And I think a coach like Jimbo Fisher is the reason why, because it's really hard, even though when you inherit that level of success and you're at a high level program, it's really hard to sustain that level of success. And for them to be, you know, he's won two Big Ten championships. He's been in the college football playoff multiple times. He's been in the race. But you also can't discount the fact that Greg Schiano has made Rutgers relevant again. And I've always said this, and now it's kind of a moot point considering we don't have divisions, but I always thought when he returned, he would turn Rutgers into that, into the Northwestern of the Big Ten East. They would never win. I know Northwestern won the West a few years, but Rutgers was never going to be a challenger to the Big Ten East. But there were going to be some years where you're like, damn, we got to go play Rutgers, and that's not going to be an easy game. You know, they might upset you. They're just going to be a physical team, play really good defense, not make mental mistakes. And so I think he's done an excellent job as well, considering he doesn't have the resources. I think the recruiting he's done has been really well. He's done a really good job on that front. But I still go Ryan Day because it's hard to maintain that success. I mean, Greg Schiano can win six games every year, and nobody's going to – Rutgers has seen the lowest of lows. Nobody's going to complain about a bowl game every year.
Well, as our buddy Jim Harbaugh said, Ryan Day was started out at third base and thought he hit a triple. So, you know, that's what I wonder. If they were to swap jobs, how would Schiano do at Ohio State? How would Ryan Day do at Rutgers?
Great. Well – I don't know that Ryan Day would be, he clearly would not be as successful, and he might fall on his face, but we also saw, now I know he wasn't the head coach, but do you remember 2018 and Ohio State had a really good team offensively, but do you remember how bad that defense was? The fact that they only lost one game was a testament to Urban Meyer, Ryan Day. And I don't know if Kevin Wilson was also on that staff at Ohio State. That's just a testament to how good they were offensively, because that defense, I remember the Purdue game specifically, they ended up with like 80 missed tackles or whatever the number was. So I don't think Greg Schiano would be that successful at Ohio State. I don't think he'd be termed a failure, but I also don't think Ryan Day would be able to do what Greg Schiano's doing at Rutgers right now.
I actually agree on that. I don't think Schiano would be as good at Ohio State and vice versa. I don't think Day would be as good at Rutgers, because I think the way for Rutgers to reach respectability, as I said, they want to turn the game into a rock fight. That's right. Greg Schiano's style, and it works for Rutgers and their type of recruit. That's not necessarily the type of play that you want at an Ohio State when your goal are national championships. Let me ask you this. From my angle, from Penn State, we look at the, you know, Ohio State and Michigan were the teams that Penn State had to overcome. Now, with the West Coast team, specifically this season, it's Oregon is part of that mix. Maybe in the long run, USC is. But who is, especially this year, who are the other teams that we should be talking about that we Penn State fans are not?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head when we were talking before this show. Because of the way their schedule plays out, I think Iowa is a team to keep an eye on. And I don't mean that in the sense that I think that they're going to be one of the best teams in college football. I think that they are solid under Kirk Ferentz. You know they're probably going to win eight games. God, their offense cannot possibly get any worse, Jim. It was so bad. So even if they take a step up where they, you know, I think they average like 13 points. If they average like 19 points, is that going to be enough to finish 10-2, 11-1, and maybe be in that conversation because of the ease of the schedule? I think that I'm not sure yet with the two second year coaches, with Luke Fickell and Matt Rhule. I think that both of those teams are going to be, if this was in the old Big Ten West, I think both of those teams would be in contendership to win that division, but because they don't, I don't know that they're going to be at the top, but those might be teams that are kind of sneakily in the middle. Like, you know, could be 8-9 win teams potentially. Those are the teams I'm looking for. I think USC, again, we've talked about this. If they can figure things out defensively, they've got good enough offense to be a challenger, but if they don't figure things out defensively, it could get dicey for Lincoln Riley.
It really can. All right, Dustin, that is it for quarter number three. We have one more segment to go and lots more to talk about with Big Ten football. Stay tuned for that.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. I am Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, Big Ten writer for Sports Illustrated, and Dustin's giving us a good overview of everything going on in the Big Ten. We talked about Ohio State and Oregon being the most talented teams in the conference. I don't think there's much doubt about that. Michigan and Washington are two interesting teams for where they were last year. New coaches, new quarterbacks. We don't know, like Michigan, do we know who the quarterback's going to be? And, you know, what do you see from those two teams?
Here's a bold prediction. I'm going to start with this. I'm going to say that those two teams combined are going to be 500 next year. And I don't mean that in saying that both teams are going to be 6-6, although that is a possibility. But I could see Michigan being 7-5, 8-4, and then Washington being the reciprocal of that 4-8, 5-7. Because Kalen DeBoer completely transformed everything Washington did in his short time with the Huskies. Michael Penix Jr. was a Heisman Trophy contender. The defense was really solid, but they were explosive on offense. And Michael Penix Jr., Rome Adunze, they had some really good pieces that were first-round picks. I mean, they had some high-caliber players. And so I just think, you know, I know they don't have the toughest schedule. They do have Michigan on there. They do have USC. They do have Penn State, and they play Oregon. So it's not maybe the most difficult schedule, but it's up there towards the top. I just think when you're going through a complete transformation, there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve and an adjustment process. So I think Washington's going to struggle. How much faith do you have in Sharon Moore at Michigan? I don't have a lot. Especially this isn't a Ryan Day situation where he's returning a ton of talent. Like, this isn't like he's inheriting a championship caliber football team. He's inheriting a championship caliber program, but this is a team that lost what, 18 of its 22 starters, some ridiculous number like that. He's a first year head coach. I don't know. I just don't think he's got the experience, and I think Michigan has lost so much that they're going to be right around that 500 mark. That's just – and from my understanding, I don't think they're going to retain Connor Stallions, right? So who's going to be feeding information to the sidelines there, right? I don't know. There was just so much, and I know Jim Harbaugh wanted to go back to the NFL, but he also wanted out of Michigan for a reason, right? Like, a lot of times, if you see that the cupboard's going to be pretty bare, you bolt for the next job. And I think that while Jim Harbaugh did want to win a Super Bowl, I also think that seeing what they were going to be losing and the potential NCAA sanctions that could be coming, I think they're going to be fighting an uphill battle. Doesn't mean they can't get back to a bowl game, but I don't know, I think 8 wins is their max this year. Maybe I'm a hater, I don't know.
Wow, that is a very bold prediction. And I think some of it, when I look at the programs and not even going in and studying it, it's just hard to imagine now after the last several years, Michigan being down, right?
Yeah.
Washington, you feel like, well, everything just fell into place perfect for them last year. I thought DeBoer did a great job. Michael Penix, I was a fan of his back to his Indiana days. Penn Staters still are upset with him. But he was out of bounds. It, you know, that two-pointer, right, that wasn't legitimate. Anyway, but his talent, I thought, was obvious. And to get a team around him like he did at Washington, but you just think, hey, that's all gone. I can see Washington really, really coming back to the pack. Michigan, boy, I need to see it. And when I say I need to see it, I really need to see it. as a Penn State fan, I'm anxious to see it.
I completely agree with you. I don't know, and I understand that there's like, obviously Sharon Moore led a really good offense, and obviously Michigan was really good, but when you don't have Blake Corum, you don't have JJ McCarthy, you don't have your entire offensive line that had been there for 37 years, it seemed like, you know, when you are missing all of these pieces, that makes a difference. And so I don't doubt that talent wise, Michigan has the pieces there to be a really good football team down the road, but these guys just don't have, in my opinion, the staff and the, because the other aspect of this is not only did you lose all of your key players basically from a season ago, you lost essentially your entire staff. So you've got to replace from the top down. And so to me, that's where the biggest level of intrigue. And it's not like they've got an easy schedule. They got some tough games on that schedule. And I think we're going to find out a lot, even if you eliminate the non-conference, we're going to find out a lot about Michigan. Don't they open with Fresno State? First of all, that's a solid group of five program that could be a loss. I'm not trying to be ultra negative on Michigan, but Fresno State is solid. And in the first two games they have at home against USC and Minnesota, we might know a lot about Michigan through the first five games of the season.
It seems to me they also have another pretty tough out-of-conference game, Dustin.
You think so?
I'm just throwing it out there. Longhorn team isn't too bad.
This Texas team may not be too bad either. Yeah.
that could be a rude awakening for them going into this. So go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say this is going to test some patience, because let's say, man, could you imagine if Michigan's 2-3, how are they quickly going to turn on Sharon Moore? Will it be that quick?
What you got to wonder is how much goodwill does the national championship buy you? Even though I know it's not Jim Harbaugh as the head guy anymore, but you would like to think that that would buy you a little bit of time. I think somebody's got to be there saying, hey, look, just all the things that you brought up, Dustin,
right,
a complete changeover in staff, lose essentially the entire team, the whole roster turns over, new guy in charge, even like the recruiting sort of starts over again. It's a whole new ball game. So you'd like to think that saner heads would take over. When you're talking college football and sanity, they're usually mutually exclusive.
That's right.
Dustin, I did want to ask you now also, the other big change in the Big Ten is the television coverage. Very different. They've evolved over the years from the ESPN-centric to Fox, and now adding in CBS, NBC. And I'll bring up, this is from the Penn State angle, and some folks, even some people on the air, me, were upset with the Big Ten office. We're talking about the whiteout game. Now, it's traditionally been the biggest game of the year. It was alternating year after year, Ohio State and Michigan. It would be a night game. It would be the atmosphere. And now, with Fox getting the primary games, and they want to put those great games on at noon. My argument always is, why can the Big Ten, they can fall all over themselves making sure Michigan and Ohio State play exactly when they want to, last weekend at noon. Could they not accommodate the whiteout, one of the biggest games in the national picture, by putting, even if it's not Ohio State, can you put a Washington or a USC or somebody like that on the schedule in October and designate it, this has to be a night game for the whiteout?
This might be the one thing where you talk about the Big Ten didn't think about in terms of the scheduling. they didn't think that one through, because you would think they'd want to get – that would be a big-time game for whatever network wants to air it. Even – I know Fox is in the, you know, the big noon kickoff. Their noon slot is the premier game, quote-unquote. And so you see a lot of those big-time matchups being played in that time slot. But I would think that because of the allure of the whiteout, the way it looks on television, people probably watch that game just because of the look of it, right? Like, I'm a casual college football fan probably just says, hey, it's the whiteout game. I'm going to turn that on because it's really, it's a fun atmosphere. So you would think that they would, it doesn't, you know, you could have Ohio State, Michigan, like you said, Washington, Oregon, but you could probably even throw Wisconsin in there. That would bring some appeal. But yeah, you probably don't want it against like Illinois or UCLA or Purdue. You want it against at least somebody that you think is going to be a formidable opponent, potentially a ranked team. I think last year it was against Iowa, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was.
And I mean, Iowa, I think they were ranked going into that game. Obviously, their offense was nothing, and it turned out to be a blowout for Penn State. But yeah, I'm surprised they didn't think that one a little bit through, but they haven't set the dates for next season. So maybe there's still a little bit of hope that they'll correct the wrong with next season's potential whiteout.
Well, I appreciate you taking that perspective on it, because here, you know, we see it from the Penn State perspective. And I look at it like, as we Penn State fans often do, it's a slight from the Big Ten.
Sure. Sure.
And, you know, I always compare it to like ESPN would always put their big games at night, but they just knew you can't do that with Michigan and Ohio State. It wasn't television controlling it. It was the Big Ten Conference and those two schools. So that's why I couldn't understand why it couldn't be the same thing here. And it wouldn't take much adjusting the schedule to make sure that you do this like in October, so there's not that archaic Big Ten, you can't have a night game in November thing.
Right. And it's interesting to me, because this isn't one of those, this isn't an Ohio State, Michigan, or it's not an LSU, Alabama, where people know the teams and they're going to tune in because it's that specific game, right? Like, this is, to me, I just said that people are going to tune into the whiteout game almost no matter who's playing, but there's going to be some, there would probably be some a lack of interest if it was Illinois or Purdue or Indiana, as opposed to playing, like I said, even a Wisconsin, somebody that you know that has some brand recognition, Michigan, Ohio State, Washington, Oregon, USC, all those teams have brand recognition. And with 18 teams in the conference, there's no shortage of options. So I think from a national perspective, if they want to get as many eyeballs on that game as they possibly can, as awesome as the whiteout is, no matter who they're playing, it's going to, can I say the word behoove? It's going to behoove the conference in terms of television deals to put, you know, the better teams on there. Michigan State, Wisconsin, maybe Iowa every now and then, Ohio State, Michigan. I'll be surprised if that's not the case next season, starting next season.
We shall see, Dustin. We shall see. I thought, you know, some of the new teams, like Washington is on their schedule at home. So instead of having that late in the season, have that like early in the year, early before Washington has a chance to, maybe we find out they're not very good. Dustin, I want to thank you so much. The time just flew by, and thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.